Cash number 16900, Vera Elkan, reel 4.
Mrs. Vera Morley, reel 4. Because I travelled mostly with Norman Bethune, Dr. Norman Bethune, I seem to end up mostly with the hospital units. But not entirely. And therefore, a lot of the filming that I did was either wounded lying about in corridors because they didn't have enough room, or taking bullets out of people without anaesthetic because they didn't have any, or direct blood transfusions because they didn't have the right blood type or no blood. And I was really only at the front if I stayed overnight. For instance, I once stayed with the Italian, battalion in a place whose name escapes me, but it wasn't far from the Escorial. And there I got into trenches, and they posed for me, pretended there was a war, and I was really at the front because you could see the other front. And they took me to see the Escorial, and I have quite a good picture of that with two of them standing there. And there I found a bath, actually, but it was full of things. So I asked the cook to empty it, and I had a bath. And I could hear them next door all discussing this, that this was a very strange thing to do. But it was very nice for me. And also in all the medical units I got to, I had a bath. And in one they wanted to scrub me, but I said, no thanks. Because we didn't have, in Madrid we had no hot water at all.
What sort, did you get an idea of the sort of life the International Brigade people were living?
Well, I think when they weren't, you see, all this was long before the big Ebro battles and the other big battles. And they were still living a reasonably unfighting war, except in the university city, where they were shelling each other all the time. And also the fascists were around Madrid, and the shells kept coming in. And also, wherever I was, there were always Stuka dive bombing raids, which was a bit frightening. So that when this war broke out, this last war, and the sirens went off at 11 o'clock in the morning, I really took the two dogs, put their muzzles on, and went downstairs because I really thought, now we're going to get it, having experienced it. But on the other hand, everybody got used to it. We had lots of raids in Madrid, and nobody turned a hair. And nor did I actually see anybody killed much. In Madrid once, I was in the war ministry about something, I don't remember what, with an Irishman called Frank Ryan. And Frank was experienced from the First World War. And he took his pocket knife out and cut a sliver of desk off. We were somewhere downstairs. And he said, put that between your teeth and then you won't bite your tongue and you won't get sort of blast in your ears. Some theory like that. And I did, and I didn't get any of the things he thought I might. And he did it too, and the desk didn't improve. And he got caught by the fascists later on and was in jail for ages and ages, I heard from somebody. I got shot at in the trenches several times, but I learned my lesson. And it had been perfectly quiet until I appeared with my camera. And then they said, you get ducked down, ducked down. And you, it's you who's causing it. And it was my shiny lens, which they hadn't blacked out, which, of course, hadn't occurred to any of us in peaceful London.
Did you then take precautions after that? You know, having been fired at, could you do anything about the lens?
No, I didn't. I don't know. I suppose if they were actually actively shooting, you wouldn't have done much photography anyway. You'd be ducking anyway. I was once on a front somewhere where the Galicians were. And I've been told I'm wrong since. But I thought it sounded very, very like Scottish music they were playing. And somebody said to me there that they were related in some way to the Gaels. And it sounds like it. I don't know who's right about that. But they were very nice. And everybody at the front, of course, was thrilled to see a female. And very hospitable. And very nice. I never had any trouble at all in Spain.
Were there other women about? You know,
yes, there were. I knew mainly the British ones, of course, and the British colonies, dominions. There was one called Joan. I think you've had an interview with somebody. Haven't you had an interview with Thora, who was Thora Sinclair Lutet, and is now Thora, she's married to an architect now. I can't remember. There were lots of British men. I met most of the doctors. There was Archie Cochrane and the journalists. There was Kenneth Sinclair Lutet, Douglas Jolly, Alex Tudor Hart. They were all doctors. And Thora and Joan were nurses. And there were some others that I knew, but I don't remember their names.
What would the communist proportion have been? Were mainly people mainly communists, or was that not necessary?
No, I think they were mainly anti-fascists. I think that maybe the people fighting were more communists, but the doctors were more idealists. I think we perhaps all were. And we thought we could improve the world. What a hope.
You were saying earlier how confused the situation was with all the different groups of fighters in Spain.
No, that wasn't confused.
Yes.
They were simply, they were quite clear. They all had their commanders. The British had Nathan as their commander. And the Germans had Hans Kahle and Richard. The French, I don't really remember. It was called the André. Could have been Moreau, but it could have been something else. Battalion. They were all quite separate, but they were all classed under the International Brigade. And the Spanish, of course, were quite separate. What happened towards the end of the war, I don't remember. Whether they got together. No idea.
The actual members of the International Brigade, you were saying they were, a lot of them were very idealistic people. Was any social class represented more than another, would you say?
I don't know. I only met the British fighting people when they were not at the front. And I would have said, on the whole, they were probably more working class than upper class, but the doctors and the journalists were all middle, upper middle class, probably. For instance, the journalist Claude Coburn was one, who was a good, great friend of mine. I went with them a lot to the front too. And Philip Jordan was another friend. He was there for the News Chronicle. And a man called Willie Foster, I think. Willie, for the Express. Claude was there for the Daily Worker. Claude was a committed communist at that time. But he later on, I don't think he was. He moved to Ireland and then he died.
What were you doing when you went up with the journalists? Were you doing photography?
Oh, yes,
for
it was
them?
All this. No, not for them. Oh, Matthews was there from the New York Times. He bought a few of my photographs.
How easy was your job? You know, given the conditions of the time and
Well, when you think of today, if the BBC had done it, or independent television, they would have sent 10 people, and I was one. And I had, the film came first, and the photographs came second. But, of course, I'd never made a film in my life. I'd been in that film company in South Africa, but had nothing to do with filming. I had to get to know the camera, what the camera could do. And the Leica, of course, was wonderful and very useful and very quick. So I had to do both, you know, quickly change from one to the other. So I haven't got nearly as many photographs as I would have liked. But the film, eventually, when I got back to London, I was very ill, and I had nephritis, and I was in UCH. So along came some people called the Union Theatre, was it? I think so. And they said they would edit it. And they were very left-wing. And they took away all my material. Oh, no, I think we better start at a different angle. Finally, I had quite a lot of film in Spain. And it was high time I got back to London in order to make use of it, because otherwise it would have been out of date. And they wanted to make money. So I was feeling very ill. But I didn't know what it was. And I traveled down to Barcelona. Somebody must have taken me. And when I got to Barcelona, they said, would you take 5 British wounded across with you back to England? Walking wounded. So I said, yes, sure. And we got in a car one evening to go, because it wasn't safe to travel in the daytime. And then the war had begun to hot up a bit. And we tried to travel across the Pyrenees. And it was a horribly stormy night. And when we got to the top, the 2 frontier guards came out. And I really was frightened. They were picked up by the wind, and one was flung against a sort of railing and a deep drop the other side, and he just clung to the railing. And the other one opened our car door, and the car door slammed at him. And all they managed to say is, you can't go any further, it's too dangerous. So somehow we had to turn around, go back down to Porto. When we got there, my 5 wounded weren't all that happy, and nor was I. They said, you've got to walk through the tunnel to Cerbère, there aren't any trains, and then you have to catch a train in France. The tunnel was pitch black. They gave us each a stick, and there were a lot of other people also in the same position. And one man had a torch, and he walked in front, and we had to run the stick along the railing to know where we were and follow. And I was carrying all my stuff. And when I got to Salbelle, I don't remember what happened to the five British, because I certainly didn't travel with them after that. They must have gone some other way. And I sat there for a long time, very, very early in the morning, very cold. It must have been a sort of buffet or a hotel buffet or something. And I wrote to my mum, who didn't know where I was, and she was in South Africa. And I disappeared for 2 or 3 months. And I wrote and told her the sanitized version that you've seen. And then caught a train. And when I got to Paris, I really felt ill. And I had, in fact, nephritis, which is not very nice. And so I rang up London and they said, catch a plane, which I'd never done before commercially. I'd flown quite a lot. Non-commercially, but not commercially. So I went to, I don't know whether it was Le Bourget, I think, or Orly or somewhere, and caught a plane. And I arrived in Croydon, which was still an aerodrome. And as I got out of the plane, I was jumped on by quite a few, I don't know, whether they were MI5 or what they were, and they wanted to see absolutely everything I'd brought back, every photograph that I'd had developed, every poster propaganda. I brought a lot back. I unscrewed with Bethune and other people. We unscrewed a lot of bits of, not machinery, but things that were on machinery showing that they were German planes or Italian planes. And I got all that because I wanted to give it to somebody in Parliament to show them that the Germans and the Italians were fighting on the side of the fascists. Of course, the Russians were helping our side, but we didn't really want to publicize that. And the bus was standing out there with all the other passengers in, waiting for me. And they spent ages looking through everything. And then they said, you can go. And I got in the bus, and I was scowled at by everybody because I kept waiting. And then I went to hospital. And there, they edited by this union. It wasn't called the Union Theatre, but something similar. Edited my film, and then whenever they needed to know what something was, they brought it in with a machine and projected it. And two of the UCH nurses got so struck, they all asked, wanted to see it, and they all came and crowded into my room and watched it. And two of them were so struck by the whole affair that they also went to Spain, whereupon UCH said, never will you darken our doors again. But fortunately, they're very nice to me now because I don't go under my maiden name. So they don't know it's me. And in any case, they've probably forgotten.
What did you think of the finished film after it had been edited?
Ah,
was it faithful to what you had
yes,
seen?
Yes, absolutely. They just really, they didn't edit it. They only stuck it together, really. But then it was used. And the very first one was in Paddington Town Hall. I'll never, never forget that. And I had written out a beautiful speech, which I was going to give before the film. This was really, really terrible. Sitting beside me on the platform was Marjorie Pollitt, the Harry Pollitt's wife, and various other luminaries of that sort, and me. And the town hall was full. And after I'd spoken, they were going to show the film. Whereupon, heroic me got up, saying, I can't speak in public to myself, and nor could I. I said about three words, and my throat closed up, not a word came out, and they broke into terrific applause, thinking I was overcome with emotion. I wasn't at all. I was overcome with stage fright. So I handed the thing to Marjorie Pollitt, who read it out, and it was fine. Then I was asked to speak, I think it was in Ealing. And I pulled myself together, and I said, there are no cleverer or stupider than you in front there. Pull yourself together and do it. And I did it. And since then I've been able to do it. And then I spoke in various places, and I think we made some money. But this was all... Oh, yes, I haven't finished with the story about Croydon. There I was, went into hospital. I was ill and on the Lago Maggiore for 2 or 3 months, I don't know exactly. And I came back clean. I wasn't at all clean or dressed or anything. I was in my working clothes from Spain, you know, trousers and all my luggage, which wasn't there. I mean, I could carry it. And I came back via Folkestone, I think. And I went through the passport, and a man tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, how do you do, Miss Elkin? I looked at him, and I said, I don't think I've met you. Oh, yes, you have, he said, in Croydon so many months ago. I said, oh? He said, have you been in Spain again? I said, no. He said, are you sure? Yes. I was horrified that anybody could recognize me like that. And later on, in 1940, when I was called before the board to join up in the WAF, the first thing I did was to stand in front of them. I didn't know what scrambled egg was, you know, and there were lots sitting in front of me. I said, before I sit down, I will tell you that if you want to know anything about me, and I knew this was true, go to MI5, there's a thick file on me, and I was on what you would consider the wrong side of the Spanish Civil War. Whereupon, embarrassed silence opposite me, and they said, do sit down.
Did you have the feeling that the attitudes were against the Republicans?
Oh, absolutely, totally against. Except the chap whom I happened to know, who was an MP, who was a Scotsman, whose name escapes me now too, Max something. And I gave him a lot of the material, and he did try to use it, but I don't think he could. No, they were all 100% pro-Franco. You can be quite sure, and this you can keep on your record, if the Foreign Office can put its feet in the wrong place, they will.
Going back to Spain,
yes,
and the photographs you took, are there any particular scenes that you photographed that stand out in your mind?
Only one that I've got downstairs, I'll show you before you go, which is the best photograph I've ever taken of the woman with the baby.
Where was she? Could you tell me about
her? She was a gypsy woman sitting on a doorstep outside a church after or during a bombing raid. And it looks like a Madonna and Child. And she... when Gordon Kerridge was here from Australia, he asked me to give him a copy, and I did. And he's, to my intense pleasure, really, when he showed me his consulting room, which is lovely, he has it hanging behind his desk with all his certificates, you know, for medicine, diplomas. And there's this one photograph, and that's by me. And he has a patient who's a nun. And she came in one day and said, oh, the Madonna again, how lovely. And he said, it's not a Madonna, it's a gypsy woman. And she begged him for a photograph, and he had it reproduced, and it's now in this nun's cell as a Madonna, which is rather nice. That's my best photograph, I think. The others are all quite good, but they're not like that child, for instance, in Vietnam, running, all burning. You know, horrible. When I was in Madrid, you got used to dead bodies in a way. I mean, I did see some. I didn't see a lot. But one day I came back to the flat, and there was a dead child on the sofa in the main sort of sitting room, and two very weeping women beside it. And for some reason I had to go in there. And it was very imminent, the whole war, you know. It was very alive. Whereas the rest of the war, in a way, didn't really touch me all that much. I was in the university city where the fighting was pretty fierce one day, and I was filming. The other side was not far away, you know, a few hundred yards. It's like these pictures you see today of city fighting. And wounded were being carried out and shots were going on. And I filmed some of this, and I filmed the trenches, the trench I was in. Because right at the far end of that trench was a group of people who seemed to me to be very active. Until I saw that a camera was pointed in my direction, where there was also a group of people very active. And that evening, as it happened, in the flat was a visitor, and the visitor was a man called Evans, and he was the photographer who was taking photographs for Hemingway, for whom the bell tolls. And he thought I was war, and I thought his lot were war. And it was so funny. In fact, neither of us were war. But, yes, in the university city, they let me shoot a bit. There was a machine gun, a sort of, it was like a stem gun, I suppose. But I don't think I hit anybody.
Did you ever have any dilemmas about what you filmed? You know, were there ever any subjects which you would have felt uncomfortable with filming?
No, except, well, I didn't film the weeping women. I wouldn't have done that, not like today. I mean, you know, that was, I didn't film the dead child either. I think you know instinctively what you can film and what you can't. And the people who say, and how did you feel about that? And it's somebody's child who died. And they ask the mother that question. I think it's such an impossible question to ask. It's so stupid. I wouldn't do that.
Do you think having the looking through a camera, it makes the job easier?
Much easier. For me, certainly, because it's so much smaller and so much less personal.